Search and rescue efforts continue in Texas following the floods. A 52-member Missouri Task Force 1 team is deploying to help with those efforts. And they gathered and left from the Boone County Fire Protection District. And joining us now is the Assistant Fire Chief in Boone County, and that is Gail Blomenkamp. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So Missouri Task Force 1, for people who aren't familiar with it, what is that group? How does it work? How do they come together to help out in natural disasters like this?
So Missouri Task Force 1 is one of the 28 FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agencies, Urban Search and Rescue Task Forces. There's 28 in the country. We have one right here in Missouri. It's Missouri Task Force 1 based here in Boone County. It's a division of the Boone County Fire Protection District. And it's a team made up of 210 different members from all around the state of Missouri. So all four corners and everywhere in between. These 210 members train. They're the best of the best. They have specialty trainings, specialty equipment that is provided by FEMA. And this task force was began forming in 1996. We went through a competitive process in 1998, became the 26th team in the country, and Ohio was the 27th team, and then Texas joined when President Bush was in office and as the 28th team. And so Missouri Task Force 1 has been around for a while. Our very first deployment actually occurred on 9/11, 2001, to the World Trade Center, and so that was our first deployment. But since then, we've become a very elite team that deploys a lot based on the national rotation and how teams get deployed. We're one of the highest deployed teams in the country, and we go down to these hurricanes and floods and tornadoes here in the Midwest quite often.
And it's not just like firefighters and paramedics and people like that. You've got a lot of different talents that are part of this task force, right?
Correct. We have, firefighters, paramedics, those types of, but we also have doctors, we have structural engineers, we have technical info specialists, we have communication specialists. We have 19 different disciplines within the task force that are covered whenever we deploy. And so on this deployment, we went out as what's considered a type 3 task force, which is almost half of a type 1 task force. So it would normally have been 45 people on this deployment. However, they asked us to send four HRD or human remains detection canine dogs and handlers. And then we also sent one additional member on the Type 3 team as a search team manager to help with that those extra dogs. And then we also have two members that deployed today as part of the incident support team for FEMA. And so they'll be working as the incident support team, managing all the federal resources that are on scene.
This may be just a dumb question, but just logistically, when you have that many people with different skill sets, I imagine they have lots of different equipment that they'll be using or bringing. How do you get an entire team and everything they need down there?
So the Type 3 team is traveling with the entire cache of equipment. So it's a full Type 1 cache of equipment, which you're right, is very diverse and runs the gamut as far as satellites and sat phones and all of those things to communicate with, but also all the rescue and breaching and breaking equipment. So it takes a convoy of tractor trailers, gooseneck trailers. It's about 100,000 pounds of equipment that these men and women are taking with them. And so it was a convoy yesterday of 13 different vehicles, and including three tractor trailers, goosenecks, one bus, and then several vans and utility vehicles pulling Kubotas and all-terrain vehicles and boats especially.
So what happens when everybody gets there?
So the team was originally sent or headed towards Kerr County, Texas, and they have recently been redirected to San Antonio, where they will stage their – there'll be a staging area there, and the crews will arrive and they will await an assignment based on the local needs. And so when that need arises, it could be search and rescue. It could be wide area search. It could be any type of mission that these men and women are trained to do, which is really about anything. They'll get that mission assignment, and then they will deploy and go complete that mission as requested by Texas and or that local jurisdiction that they're working with.
You know, you mentioned that there will be dogs as well, you said, for finding human remains or even those who are still alive?
Yeah, so there are two live find canines that went, and then there were four human remains detection canines. So total of six dogs. Unfortunately, we kind of understand what this mission could be in Kirk County with the devastation and the disaster that they have had there. It's going to be more of a recovery mission and searching for people that are missing, right?
Yeah.
Very difficult work, very hard on our men and women, but it is something that brings some satisfaction to give closure to the families that are suffering down there. They've also got anticipated rainfall and the potential for a different assignment or more flooding to occur, and so therefore we take live find dogs as well, just in case we receive a different mission somewhere else.
And obviously right now the focus on helping those in Texas, right, with that, you know, recovery mission or search mission, whatever they're assigned to do. But when the task force does come back, when they are done, because what they've seen might be, you know, just devastating or graphic, like you said, very difficult for them, is there some kind of debriefing or counseling or anything that they go through afterwards?
Yeah, so obviously when they get back, there's a debriefing here at the fire headquarters where we get, you know, it's just the crews that went. We talk to them, and there is counseling available. We have an employee assistance program that is available for them. Many of these members that are going have gone before mm-hmm. and have avenues for that, and we have that available to them. But even in their home departments, if they work for a agency outside of Boone County, they have those EAP programs, and they have the availability for these men and women to seek that counseling should they need it. But generally speaking, people in the service generally find that comfort talking to one another mm-hmm. and talking to, you know, maybe the guys that's been out there multiple times, or, you know, they talk with their buddies at work, so to speak. But these men and women are very experienced. They're trained very well. But regardless of that, what they're going to be dealing with down there is going to be very difficult. And, you know, the men and women of tech in the state of Texas have been dealing with it since Friday morning or Friday night. So very difficult for them. They're looking for a break. They need to get some rest as well. But we're on our way, and we'll get there as soon as we can. And when we get there, we'll be ready to do whatever we can to help them.
What are the particular challenges of going to a scene like this? If you do end up in a flood scene, as opposed to, you know, a tornado or some other sort of disaster like that.
Well, so just the amount of destruction that this flood has caused, it's record flooding. So there's going to be humongous debris piles where these piles need to be searched and delayered, which is very dangerous for crews to do. They try to do it with equipment and hands, but, you know, we're not talking just about the debris. We're talking about the snakes and the animals and the fire ants and all of those other things that we deal with on a daily basis have been disrupted, and they're not very happy either. And so there have been reports of some of the search canines having snake bites, and so that is a possibility, whether it's one of them or one of our people. So just the amount of destruction, and then just trying to get around. Roads being washed out. Most of the work's going to be what we call ground pounding, where you're just walking, you know, along a riverbank, or you're walking along an area that was flooded out, and you're checking debris piles and searching them with the HRD dogs, seeing if there's something available or some sort of scent that would necessitate delayering of that pile. So it's very strenuous work. It's going to be hot. I mean, it is Texas in July, so it's going to be hot, it's going to be humid, and then just dangerous terrain and unfamiliar territory for everybody.
I also remember from the flood of 93 that happening in the summer, it was hot, but with all of that water, there are diseases, toxins, mold, all of that is also a huge danger when you're in that type of area.
Yeah, so, you know, we have our people and our canines in that you know, that toxic atmosphere and that toxic water. And so, you know, not only are we working in it, but now we got to worry about cleaning up when they come in every evening and decontaminating all of the equipment and decontaminating all the people and all the clothing and the footwear and everything that they have on. And so it is a monumental task when our crews go out and work for, you know, 16 hours a day. It doesn't end when they get relieved to go back to the base of operations. That's where the decon starts, and before they can even eat or sit down and take a break. So it's very strenuous work, and these guys and gals do tremendously well, and they're the best of the best that the state of Missouri has to offer.
And the expectation is they will be there about 2 weeks?
The expectation would be they would not be any longer than 2 weeks.
Okay.
So they could be up there up to 2 weeks. The longest mission we did was last year when we went to Hurricane Helene, I believe, in North Carolina, and that was a very long deployment. We swore we would never do that again because it was just too much. So 14 days is the typical deployment time for any task force going out the door, and so that's what we could anticipate. You know, whether we're there 14 days or not is yet to be seen.
Well, Gail, we really do appreciate the work that you and your team is doing right now. It's awesome and very much needed, obviously. So well, thank you for giving us your time.
You bet. Do you have another minute?
Oh, sure.
So one of the questions that we get asked is why is Missouri Task Force 1? Why didn't we get deployed on Friday or Saturday when the floods actually occurred? And many people don't understand that every disaster starts and ends local. So this local disaster started in Texas, and they had resources that they used. Then they reached out to their state for resources, which Texas has a vast majority of resources to put towards this mission. And so once they reached their threshold of extending beyond their capabilities and their resources, that's where they reached out to the federal government. So it wasn't that FEMA was delayed. It wasn't that we weren't able to go. It's we were not requested until yesterday. And so once we got requested, we received that request at 3 o'clock. We were on the road 4 hours later, and that's how it typically works. And so, you know, people ask, well, why didn't you go on Saturday when there was rescues to be made? Well, we weren't requested, and we weren't needed. So I just want to clarify that for everybody out there that, you know, it's not that there was a delay by the government or by FEMA or by anybody. It's just how the disasters work. They begin local and they end local. So thank you to all the employers that allow these men and women off work to go do this type of mission. And then obviously to the families who are letting their loved ones go for up to 14 days. It can be very difficult.
Gail, thank you. We appreciate you and your team.
All right. Thank you guys very much.
Gail Blomenkamp, Assistant Fire Chief of the Boone County Fire Protection District, Missouri Task Force 1, en route to Texas to help out with the flooding disaster that occurred there. Jamie Marks Kors and Chris Ranji on KMOX. Don't forget, Gas House Gang at 12 o'clock, and it is Ollie Tuesday. We've got manager Ollie Marmol joining the show at 12 o'clock. He will be with us for a good 30 minutes. Sometimes he hangs out all the way up to 40 minutes.
Unbelievable.
And after the weekend they had and getting ready for a series against Washington tonight, there will be lots of questions. Bernie Miklas, Tom Ackerman, and me with the manager in 38 minutes.
Good job. Guess what we should do right now?
I don't care.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to give away Beach Boys tickets.
Right now?
Right now. Be the 8th caller to the contest line at 314-955-1120. Be the 8th caller to the contest line. And you could hear Help Me Rahanda live.
And then you can report back to John Hancock and sing it for him because he's never heard it before.
That can't be possible.
Beach Boys are performing at Chesterfield Amphitheater September 21st.
So I think it might be only one Beach Boy left. Original.
So it's a Beach Boy show?
Well, but there are other people. I wonder if... Is John Stamos going to be at this concert? You know Uncle Jesse?
I know who Uncle Jesse is.
He tours with the Beach Boys quite frequently. I thought all the time. He was not on the stage for the Capitol 4th.
Well, if he wasn't at that thing, do you think he's coming to Chesterfield?
Yeah, because I think he probably had other plans.
Well, it was the 4th of July. Yeah, it's a huge celebration, though.
I know, but I bet he wanted to be somewhere in California.
There's nowhere to go.
Probably hanging with his girlfriend and friends or wife or whatever it is that he has. And I think that's what he was doing. But maybe, I mean, Uncle Jesse could be in Chesterfield.
Is he still married to Aunt Becky? Or did they ever get, were they together?
They were never actually together.
It was just only on TV?
It was only on TV.
So he did not help her with the college scandal?
No. Aunt Becky married Max Amara or whatever, Massimo, one of those.
I don't know what that means. So, but I appreciate you trying.
You'll know who it is.
I don't think I will. Like Marcus Aurelius? Who? I don't think that you even have any idea. So I hope John Stamos
Massimo Giannulli. I don't know. He does clothes. He's a fashion designer.
Oh, the Massimo?
From Target.
I know what that is.
Yeah, that's her husband.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. She's gorgeous. She also has a mystery series on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries.
Okay.
She owns an antique store called Rags to Riches, and she solves mysteries.
You know, this is what I want to do. Like, if this doesn't work out for me, if Park Ranger doesn't work out for me, I want to be a fashion designer for clothing line that ends up at Target or Walmart. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Just, I want something affordable, something that people can, you know, get behind.
Well, just from what I know, I feel like your fashion line would have to be sold at Dick's Sporting Goods.
What do you mean?
You wear a lot of half zips with some wicking.
No, not today.
Wicking qualities.
No, not today. I got a shirt on, baby. That was weird.
Why was it so weird?
I don't know. Why did I say that? I'm disgusted with myself.
I feel grossed out, too.
Yeah. I hated everything about that.
But at any rate,
I'm wearing a regular shirt.
Garage Sale Mysteries is Aunt Becky's Hallmark Movies and Mystery series.
Okay.
They actually took her, all of her shows off the air, during the scandal. And then once the news cycle moved fast enough that people forgot about it, they put her back on.
Did she go to prison?
Yeah, I think so.
I have to be honest with you. I did not follow that story closely at all.
Stupid.
And I still don't know what the infraction is.
So
she did something to help her daughter get into college?
They lied about her...
To get her daughter into Stanford?
USC.
USC?
Yeah.
Is that like a difficult school to get into?
I mean, I guess difficult enough.
She couldn't get into USC?
I know. That's my backup school.
You had to commit fraud to get her into USC?
I know.
Is that what happened?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't make any sense.
University of Southern Chicago? Is that what
you're
thinking
of? Go to a community college or something. She can come to SWCC for a couple of years and then transfer to USC.
What is SWCC?
Southwest Illinois College. Oh. Yeah. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji. artificial intelligence is taking over everything.
Yeah.
The robots are taking over everything, and apparently they're determining whether or not you deserve a raise, a promotion, or be laid off.
This is the thing that Steve would do.
What?
I have a bad feeling that Steve is using AI to see if we deserve raises.
Oh, I'm sure he absolutely is. Well, to talk about this as a human resources managing consultant, Dante King joins the show next. AI is going to have your job soon. It's Amy Marks, Kors, and Chris Ranji on 104.1 FM, KMOX, 9 to noon every day. Time to go to the guest line. And Amy and I have been talking about how our boss makes decisions about us, whether or not we deserve promotions or raises or to be fired altogether. And we're pretty sure that he is consulting artificial intelligence. Yeah. And we know that that is becoming a more and more common practice everywhere. And it could be affecting you and your employment as you sit at your cubicle right now listening to the show instead of doing work. Let's talk to Dante King, human resource management consultant, formerly director of workforce. And Dante is with us now on KMOX. How's it going, Dante?
Going pretty well, thank you.
So, are we in danger of losing our jobs because of artificial intelligence, because a manager somewhere has used it to determine what should happen to us?
Yes, and I think even in a more expanded context, you know, a lot of people that I'm in my network use it to draft reports, to do other things that they would otherwise have people in their workforce do in terms of tasks and or projects. What I would say in terms of the threat where making decisions where people are concerned, it comes down to human bias. And if people are not entering the right information mm-hmm. to produce results that consider certain factors, then those factors won't be considered in what the tools produce. And I think it's important to understand, especially in the employment context, when decisions are being made around promotions, raises, et cetera, that in our society, you know, we are a society that is exponentially, or we are significantly affected by things like categorization, race, gender, age, sex. And if the ways in which certain groups or certain people from certain groups are affected or impacted are not considered, then those tools will not be used properly.
Yeah, the study that was conducted online last month looked at over 1,300 full-time manager level employees in the United States and found that 20% of managers said they let AI make decisions without human input. So my question would be, for all of the concerns that you mentioned, you know, not having nuance, not having personal relationships, knowing how somebody works or their character or so forth, is it even legal to have a decision made about someone's salary or job security without human input?
That's a good question. I believe that, you know, I'm not sure. I have not come upon any information that would lead me to believe that it is illegal. But I do think that that is a question that could potentially be answered through the courts in the future, because I think that there will be more cases of people feeling or believing or maybe even being able to prove that they were discriminated against or that mm-hmm. certain factors weren't considered. And I think to your question, people need to be much more thoughtful than allowing artificial intelligence tools to define or to determine outcomes where people are concerned without any human consideration. I think if we allow tools to do our jobs, we, in essence, aren't needed. What are we needed for? Mm-hmm. And I think it comes down to that and a lot of other nuanced considerations.
Yeah, well, along that line, if it's not illegal, is it at least upon the employer to present to the employee whatever decision's been made, how they came to the decision? Do they have to notify you that, yeah, we used artificial intelligence, at least in part, to make this determination, whatever that is?
They should. And it's so interesting that you asked this question, because I just produced a tool that I'm sharing with different organizations that I consult with around how employees should advocate for their rights and advocate for getting more information when their performance appraisals are delivered to them. Many times employees do not advocate in those ways. And I think it will become vitally important for people to ask more questions about how certain decisions are being made around hiring, promotions, raises. Absolutely. I think it comes down to a sense of or an element of immorality, or it's potentially unethical. That's what I would say, because when managers and supervisors are hired into their positions, they're hired because of their experience. They're hired because of their critical thinking abilities. They're not hired to for the purpose of sitting behind a desk and using a resource or, you know, a set of resources to just make decisions on their behalf. I think it is lazy. And it is just, again, I think it comes down to immorality and a sense of it's unethical, in my view.
You were formerly the director of workforce learning and development for J.P. Morgan Chase. You also worked for Wells Fargo, two pretty big companies. Is this something that is more common in larger companies? Or are you seeing smaller companies do this because they have a smaller workforce and therefore would like artificial intelligence to take on some chores for them?
Yeah, I'm seeing it more and more, I would say, in more mid-sized and or larger companies. There's just so much of a demand, too. I think sometimes people are overworked and tasked with so much responsibility that they're trying to make decisions very quickly. And I think because people are really being demanded to produce more in less time or with less resources, these resources actually, you know, I mean, I'm kind of talking about the other side now, the double-edged sword. But these resources help deliver results pretty quickly. And I think there's so, like I said, there's so a lot to consider here. And people are trying to show that they are productive and really proving their worth and improving themselves in order to get to the next step. And these resources make it very easy. I'm not going to say easier, but easier to do that.
You know, it's, I just keep thinking of AI, and I know artificial intelligence, it gives this impression that somehow the artificial intelligence is like thinking on its own. But like you said, it is wholly dependent on the input, what kind of data a manager is putting into AI. And then it's a summary based on averages, but it doesn't see the intangibles. It doesn't have that relationship to understand character, ability to adapt, attitude, ability to learn, all of those things that are so important. And like you said, are the very reasons why managers are hired in the first place, is to be a good people person.
Absolutely. And I would also add to that, just for example, you made me think of a quick example. So if I'm someone who believes that, you know, there's no misogyny, no sexism in our culture, there's no history of it, I think that the ways in which we've gotten to this moment is because, you know, men and women have had equal opportunity. I have no reference point for history. I'm coming to situations believing that I'm being fair and I'm just kind of going by what's in front of me. I am likely to perpetuate discrimination where gender is concerned. And I think that that's important, that we have to understand where people are being, what people are being influenced by, the environments and experiences that they come from, and what inspires them or compels them to make certain decisions.
If you're listening and you suspect that maybe you did not get a raise or a promotion, or maybe you lost a job altogether and there was not a human who made the decision on it, how do you tell, number one, and number two, do you have any recourse at all?
For sure. Absolutely. There's always recourse. And I think that the first step that I would recommend some people take is, you know, consult with your human resources management people. If you have a union representative, get that person involved, but go directly to the human resources manager or director and ask questions. Ask how were these decisions made? What elements were considered? And just, you know, inquiry is really the roadmap to getting the information that you need.
Do they have to tell you? Do they have to tell you and be upfront about it?
Absolutely, for sure. If they are I believe, you know, especially government entities, I worked in city and county government for a while, they have to produce that information under the Freedom of Information Act. But also in a private institution, they have to share with employees how decisions are being made, because it is a matter of, you know, whether someone is or isn't being discriminated against. And there are all agencies, for the most part, have a human resources division and an EEO division, Equal Employment Opportunity Division. So I would say, you know, if you believe that a decision was made and it, you know, was disparate, you experienced disparate treatment or some unfair treatment, discrimination, go and consult with those entities.
Dante, you're in human resources. Has it happened yet that, what if someone goes to HR because they have a complaint that someone, you know, whether it's a sexual harassment or just something that's inappropriate, something that's highly sensitive, highly human and personal, and is HR ever using AI to decide how to handle a situation or to decide who's at fault or something like that?
Well, yes. And there are instances where these tools can be very useful. But again, it centers around the person that's using it and their experience. For example, if I were to go to if I had a situation like that where someone came to me and says, you know, I feel like I've been discriminated against or harassed, the queries that I'm going to enter into tools have to do with, you know, what are the institutional policies around it? I'm going to gather documents first, potentially upload them, have them sort through what these policies say about those documents. I'm also going to enter queries around state and federal law. What do state and federal protections say about this and what I should be doing? And then I'm also going to consider my past experiences and how I've, you know, past practices that I've been exposed to, that I've been aware of, that I've utilized, because those are important. But if I am not experienced enough and thoughtful enough to do that, to enter those types of queries, then I may come up with an entirely different result, a result that might even place the organization at risk of going into further potential legal exposure.
So as we say goodbye here, is there an actual, you know, ethical, legitimate way to be using artificial intelligence that doesn't end up hurting the employee?
Absolutely. I believe with all things, for example, even policies that might exist within organizations that are just kind of written down in a handbook, it all hinges on responsibility versus irresponsibility. We need to be using these tools in a responsible way, in a responsible manner.
Dante King, Human Resource Management Consultant, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
So I am going straight down to Steve's office and we are going to get ChatGPT up and we're going to find out whether or not you should be reprimanded, Amy.
Me?
For your infractions. You said a couple of bad words today.
Did I?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do I not remember that?
Because you did it off the air and you thought we weren't listening, but we were.
I don't remember this at all.
You said bad words.
Okay.
Pajeski, didn't she?
She said bad words.
You said bad words.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to type this into ChatGPT, see if you guys are bullying me right now.
Congratulations to Linda from St. Louis, who's going to go see the Beach Boys September 21st at Chesterfield Amphitheater.
They have that song, Help Me Linda. Help me Linda, help me Linda.
Chris and Amy on KMOX, Gas House Gang, not too far away. Get started at 12 o'clock with the manager, Ollie Marmel.
Well, Chris's campaign is Save My Sheriff, because he's the only one in it. He would like to save the job of Sheriff Alfred Montgomery.
I do think there are other people involved that just haven't stepped forward yet.
Well, I've got my own campaign. It's called the SWC campaign.
Oh, this is not a terrible acronym, but go ahead.
It is a Stand With Costco. I stand with Costco.
With Costco.
Yeah, so Lululemon is suing Costco because in this lawsuit that was filed on Friday, they're alleging that Costco is selling knockoffs of Lulu's $128 pants and other pricey athleisure clothing. Well, first of all, yeah, that's what Costco does. It's like, here's your $128 Lululemon pants. Here's the Costco version.
How much would they be?
Well, there's a scuba hoodie, which is the famous Lululemon scuba hoodie.
Do they please tell me they have a smaller version? They call it Scuba Hoodie Junior. For kids? Do they do that? Do they? Do they have a scuba hoodie junior for
children? No, but now I wish
the
show was over, because there's nowhere to go with this from there.
I'm so sorry.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
It's a scuba hoodie.
But it's for small people. Okay. So how much is the scuba hoodie?
That's all I can think of. That's really good. I'm jealous. Okay, so Lululemon sells a scuba hoodie for $118. Costco sells their version for $8.
Oh, that's a significant
huge savings.
Is it quality?
Yeah, well, I think everything from Costco is quality. It's the best store in the history of the world. So in a statement to CNN, Lululemon said that Costco is stealing their ideas and is selling dupes, you know, like duplicate, in order to confuse customers into believing that the dupes are Lululemon authentic products when they're actually not.
Well, does the... Okay, I'm confused.
It says Kirkland or whatever it is on it.
Yeah, but so the logo doesn't confuse
you. They're saying that Costco is implying to people that the same factories that make Lululemon are making the Costco dupes.
Are they not?
I don't know, and I've never cared enough to be like, are these the same factories? I just go to Costco and I say, wow, this looks like high quality, and it's $8. I'm going to buy it. Lululemon got in trouble because they were selling $120 leggings that were see-through. And they pill.
Well,
Lululemon leggings pill.
Okay. All right. All right.
Anyway, I stand with Costco. Lululemon, you have low self-esteem. You are so insecure that you're going after Costco and thinking like, oh, well, we can't let these people buy Kirkland Select pants.
Okay, I like the idea.
I love Costco.
So Kirkland is kind of like that, like Whole Foods 365, you know, like their brand, right?
It's their brand, but I...
But Kirkland is, where are they? Are they Walmart?
No, Kirkland is Costco.
Kirkland is just, but I feel like I've seen that other places, though. Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know.
But
I don't
have any, I don't think people are confused by that.
No, I think they're, I thought this was... rumor by Costco shoppers that, like, if you buy Kirkland ice cream, it's actually the same as Oberweis, but you're just not getting the name brand.
Uh-huh.
I had heard that.
I
hear that about a lot of stuff, too.
Yeah.
I will say this. I don't care. Either way, my only ice cream is Kirkland Select ice cream, the Costco ice cream. My coffee is Kirkland coffee. And by golly, my pants will be Kirkland pants.
Well, I hope they stretch with all the ice cream. Have we determined whether or not for me it makes sense to have a Costco membership?
You know what?
First of all, Costco isn't close
to
me.
Do you wear Lululemon pants?
I mean, I won't. I don't have a problem with trying.
Because all you have to do is buy two pairs of pants at $8 versus $118. It pays for your membership.
Okay. I really wish there was a Costco in like Brentwood or something, but there isn't. I got to go pretty far.
Yeah, I think there's one south. I think the closest one is south.
Hey, if you could do us a favor and listen to the podcast, if you missed anything, you know where to get it. Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Chris and Amy show is right there for you. Just search it out and go back and listen. But also come back tomorrow at 9 o'clock. We need you. We hope you have a great rest of your Tuesday.